Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, we've got another episode of Outside the Actor's Studio. Paula takes a masterclass in acting from Betsy Brandt, acclaimed for her portrayal of Marie Schrader in Breaking Bad. Will Paula work from the inside out like Marlon Brando, or the outside in like Laurence Olivier, or from the outside out like Mo, Larry, and Curly? We'll find out. Plus, quotations. Our crew has brought in their favorite quotations. Bonnie Burns will deliver a nugget of distilled wisdom even, but don't quote me on that. I'm Adam Felbert, a man whose super objective every week is to find motivation for a conversational arc that builds to a rational scene ending. And now, please welcome the woman whose inner monologue is always on the outside. That'd be Paula Poundstone, everybody.
So lovely to be here. And thanks to tonight's house band returning champion, Kevin Kelso. Hey, Kevin.
Kevin Kelso, great.
Love Kevin.
I love Kevin.
You might remember Kevin has written one of our best entries in our theme song contest and also the Ballad of Captain Culpepper.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh,
yeah.
Kevin's a star. He's a goddamn star.
Yeah. So what's new, Paula Poundstone?
Well, you know, I wish I could tell you that I was out and about more, but I'm not. But I keep, as I stare at my computer a lot, I keep seeing commercials for that show where they trace the person's roots.
I'm not familiar with that show.
It's Henry Louis Gates.
Okay.
I forget the name of it, but, you know, he takes various well-known people. And I just see the ads for it. And in the ad, like, I guess after he does all this research on their genealogy, he gives them like a scrapbook kind of thing with all this information. And the ads always have them like, you know, slapping their hands on their face and being like, oh my God. Or they push back from the table and they're crying. Uh-huh. And they're like, I can't believe it. I knew there was something. And it's always that they're so moved. It turns out that, you know, they're direct descendants of Harriet Tubman.
Or
the guy at the very back of the Iwo Jima statue was their grandfather. Or they were Mother Teresa's one slip-up. Why is it that there's always, in every single one of them, like no exception, there's always some historically significant story? I mean, what are the odds of that? Why isn't anybody ever related to thousands because of a UCLA student who put himself through school as a sperm donor? Why doesn't Henry Louis Gates say to one of them, you know, nobody in your life was remarkable in any way? Or the person flips through the book and they just go, this is so boring. And Henry Louis Gates says, that's right, you come from a long line of milk toast. And that's the end of the episode. What are the odds?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't make any sense. It makes me think that like a reality TV show, like some of it's not real.
Well, it's possible, but isn't it also possible that they just don't show you the episodes where Henry Louis Gates, you know, just yawns and says, you know, your family tree is uninteresting?
No, I don't think so. Now, you know, I'll tell you. I think, you know, if people find somebody that they connect with and there's value to it, oh my gosh, fantastic. Anytime that's possible, that is just great. But I do think that this idea that because you have some, you know, genetic components that are shared, that you're necessarily going to find some great relationship there is absurd.
I agree with you. But at the same time, I mean, remember, we're all descended from mitochondrial Eve.
Yeah.
There's one lady that we're all descended from, and she, boy, she was busy.
Yeah, she's my aunt. No, I've told you before that I have an Aunt Stormy, right? I know I've told you that. I have an Aunt Stormy.
Yes.
And she sued the shit out of Trump.
Yes, she did.
No, that,
your Aunt Stormy.
It's not that. I do have an Aunt Stormy, but it's not that Stormy.
Different Stormy.
Although I was so excited when I first heard there was a Stormy involved. I thought, oh my gosh, it's my aunt.
And it wasn't. Wow.
No. It would have been such a great story, though. I would have been on that Henry Louis Gates show in a heartbeat. Well, your aunt seems to
That would have been great.
Yeah, your aunt seems to have been with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Just after the birth of Barron.
Yeah, Henry Louis Gates, I figure, would have enjoyed that one.
Yeah. I bumped into him once at right beside a Dunkin' Donuts in the airport in Boston. And I'm pretty sure that he picked up a little bit of a donut that I had and got my DNA off of it.
Oh. So your doorbell could ring at any minute.
Yes. Yeah, so we could have a fascinating breakdown of my history. Yeah, Paul, not a thing here. Sorry.
I bet you're descended from somebody fascinating, Paula.
Yeah. Remember the lady that used to do the Palmolive commercial and she was a manicurist?
Madge.
And they'd go like, yeah, Madge, like, you know, Palmolive's good for your hands. You're soaking in it. No. Yeah. The lady who would, not Madge, I'm not related to her. I'm related to the lady who was soaking in it.
Speaking of soaking in it, that's what whales do, isn't it?
That's what what?
That's what whales do, because it's time to move on to our mighty, mighty book club.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Okay. That was a segue.
That
was really good segue, Adam.
Thank
really
you.
Good.
Yeah, it was.
Adam, answer the phone.
The phone? Paul, I want to get to book club.
Adam, answer the phone. No, answer Jesus the phone.
Christ. I don't want to.
Adam, answer the phone.
Hello?
Hey, Adam, it's me. It's me, Mike Boom Boom Bonfit. Man, that was a fucking good segue. I was like, she said you're soaking in it?
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, and that's just fucking brilliant. You know what I mean? You come up with shit like that all the time. You're soaking it, then your mind says, your mind takes it like that one step further, right? Right? You know what I mean, man?
And yeah, I get it, Mike.
Yourself, whales soak in it. Oh, man.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for explaining my joke to me, Mike, because I wasn't quite clear on what I was doing there.
Yeah, well, it's your brain, man. It has got some twists and turns, you know. But I love it that you guys are talking about. I love it that you guys are talking about Moby Dick. Get it?
What?
I said I love it that you guys are talking about Moby Dick. Get it?
I don't get it. That's the name of the book we're talking about, Mike.
Yeah, like Moby Dick. Get it?
I understand that dick is a synonym for penis, but that's not a joke so much as an observation.
What do you mean? Is it what?
Never mind, Mike. So you were just calling to compliment my segue.
Yeah, it was a fucking great segue, Adam. You know what? I bet Paula Poundstone didn't even get it. I bet she didn't get it. You know what? I don't know how you even work with that girl, man. She's a fucking bitch.
Hey, Mike, wait, no, Mike, we don't talk about my partner Paula Poundstone like that. She's my friend.
Hey, listen, man, you can pick him. All right, I gotta go. I got stuff to do, man. I can't just hang out with you all day. That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. All right, take care, man. It's good talking to you.
Take care, Mike. Good talking to you.
I love you, bro. Take care. It's good, good talking to you.
Okay. Hi, man.
Jeez, that guy really loves you.
Yeah, he sure does. Wait, he interrupted the segue that he was complimenting.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm so glad that we're moving to the book club because you guys, as you know, I'm the treasurer of the book club.
That's right.
And I'd like to give a report. Last week, we started off with no money. And this week, I am happy to report that we also have no money. And I had to pay $1.29 out of my own pocket to get the audio version of Moby Dick on my flat thing. So that'll have to be reimbursed. And I feel bad saying this, but our trip to New Bedford, which was complete with the mayor giving us the keys to the city, has been canceled.
Okay.
Partly due to financing and partly because the mayor is mad that Adam called it New Bedford, Connecticut.
Oh.
So that was a little prickly.
But you know, one of the things, error.
Yeah, look, once you piss off the mayor of New Bedford, you don't just move on. There has to be a period of healing. I'm really glad, though, that I have this. Because you know what? What occurs to me now that I look at our books carefully in order to make the report is that we really need a fundraising mechanism. And I think I'm going to put Captain Crinkle Bonnie Burns on that because I have to delegate because the duties of the office of treasurer are practically a full-time job. So, Bonnie, whatever you can come up with, you know, for a fundraising mechanism. That'd be great.
I'll take that rose.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. So Bonnie's going to be our book club fundraiser. Well, thank you. Do any of the other officers of the club have anything new to report before we get to discussing Moby Dick?
I have something. Oh, unless
oh,
Paula.
Boy.
Paula
no,
has something.
No, go ahead. Please.
By all means.
Well, we received a note on our Facebook page.
Okay.
Okay.
You act surprised. Our Facebook page generates as many as 100 notes a week.
No.
I think Bonnie just found out what the Facebook page is for. Go ahead, Bonnie.
No, I might use it for fundraising. So this was from somewhat of a celebrity. His name's William Benson. He lives in New York, and he was a contestant on Jeopardy. And here's what he wrote.
Oh, Bill Benson. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Jeopardy's Bill Benson.
I'm a little annoyed that you all have read so little of Moby Dick. I am on chapter 57, and I work 50 hours per week and have plenty of other things to do. I really haven't been reading much at a time, and I never would have started this book if not for it being chosen by your book club. I hope that efficiency advice expert helped you all speed up. In the meantime, I'm going to switch to reading some of Obama's memoir.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
Oh, Bill. Yeah.
I don't remember Bill Benson being that angry in the past. Boy, it's Bill Attitude Benson.
Yeah, but, you know, on his, he was, a 3-day champion, and on his third day, he uncovered the Daily Double, and Alex Trebek said, how much do you want to wager, Bill? And he said, fuck you, Alex.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that. That was unusual in that show.
Yeah, you usually don't get that. All Alex was doing was asking how much he bet.
Yeah, and Alex, the nicest guy in the world.
We had him on our show. He was a wonderful man.
Oh, he was great. All right, Bill, you know what? I, of course, have finished listening to Moby Dick. I have to confess, I listened to an abridged version. It started out, call me Ishmael, and then it said, the end.
Wow.
So it was...
That's quite abbreviated.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. I didn't listen. I got hooked on listening, and... you know, like a lot of kids get hooked on phonics, and I just kept listening, and and I did finish it. So, Bill, maybe your chastisement is intended for the others, Tony.
Okay.
Let me. You Googled Bill.
Tony. Tony honest Googled to Bill. God, you're out of control, and.
It's compulsive. I can't help it now.
Okay,
tell us about Bill.
You know what? One of the things you can do, Tony, if you can't stop Googling, is put some of that bad tasting stuff on the side of your fingers.
Yeah. Because everybody licks their fingers before they enter something into Google. All right, tell us about Bill. Because if nothing else, I want to send a clear message to our listeners that if you reach out and interact with us like we ask you to, we can and will drag you down. Let that be a lesson.
Yeah, yeah. And Tony, do you have Bill's phone number? I'd like to put that out there. Do you have his home address?
All right, now that you've doxed Bill, what do you have to tell us, Tony?
Okay. So he's from Albany. He's a psychiatrist.
He's a psychiatrist? And yet he's coming after us like that? Okay. So wait, psychiatrist is the medication prescribing one, right? Where a psychologist is the one
they have the right to prescribe medication.
Yeah. That's right.
But they won't necessarily do it. You have to beg.
It doesn't mean they do. And by the way, can I just insert one thing? I also Googled him, but I was trying to keep him a little bit anonymous in case we weren't supposed to give a lot of details about him to identify him, identify him. But you guys just feel, go on.
I'm pretty sure that Albany is 518 area code. I'm going to say it's 518.
But he moved to New York.
He is from Albany.
What do you mean he moved to
Albany.
New York? Albany is in New York.
Me.
Did you think that
I
was
I think
a...
his mother was Dawn Benson, who worked as legal counsel for Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital.
What are we doing? What is this?
You know, Tony, if you had read this much of Moby Dick, we wouldn't be in this situation. All right, you know what? I'm going to turn the conversation to the novel that we are reading.
Yes, let's go. And we agreed, we actually did something different this week. Because we had nothing to talk about last week, because Paula was almost done and Tony was still reading the cover, we decided that this week we were going to discuss
chapter 8.
Tony was coloring. Tony got the Moby Dick coloring book. And she
you
was coloring.
Like an idiot.
All right. But let me just finish my sentence. What I was saying was...
The only reason she stopped at page 3 is because she ran out of the color gray.
Okay. So we agreed that we should all be discussing the same part of the book, and this week it's chapters 12 through 16. So because this is your show, Paula Poundstone, what are your thoughts on chapters 12 through 16?
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
First sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix Sleep Quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that too. Like so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
They are so European. And you can get those kinds. You can get washable silk tops. You can get 14 karat gold jewelry and like all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing, they cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and a 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
A detective came and knocked on the door. And I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me then in my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Well, I noticed that when they went to Nantucket, that they didn't mention the frozen yogurt place, which in my experience of Nantucket is a big deal. And also, this is something that I just intuited because of my experience with Nantucket, is I'm fairly certain that Herman Melville forgot to mention that Queque got a denim skirt with whales embroidered on it.
He just forgot to mention that.
He just, with all that was going on, with the boys getting ready for the trip, he forgot to mention that.
I feel
okay, you
like,
know what I think is really weird in this book? There's a scene where they are on a boat and Queque gets into a tussle with I don't know if it was a kid or just a young man is small that makes fun of him.
Yeah.
A guy that makes fun of him. And so Queque sort of picks him up and tosses him in the air. He doesn't hurt him, but apparently it looks very dangerous and everybody kind of comes down on him for it. And then...
Yep.
And then seconds later, he ends up rescuing that kid, the ship, the captain, and they all decide they like him after all. But when he first throws the kid in the air, the captain yells at him. He says, you know, you could have killed that kid. And Queequeg turns to Ishmael, and he says, I don't understand what the guy said. And so Ishmael says, you could have killed him. That's how they would translate for Queequeg. If you just add an E sound to the word, all of a sudden he's like, oh, Yui could have killed him. So I will say that it's not really a linguist's text.
No, it's not. I think that the effort was there to prove that, like, Ishmael's now such good friends with Queequeg that he kind of speaks Queequeg sort of like pidgin English thing happening.
And I want to say one more thing. There's people on Facebook that have already gone out and bought Good Omens. You Good Omens people, back up. We did not choose that book. We chose Moby Dick. Walk away. Walk away, Good Omens people. I think
Look,
you're
Good
just really
fantastic
feeding
book.
Into Tony Anita Hall's woo-woo shit. And we shouldn't do that. It's not healthy for her. I'm going to read
How
Good
is that
Omens.
The woo-woo
and,
shit?
Oh, right. Tony has, I hate to say it, in front of her, but she has a tendency. That's all I'm going to say.
A tendency.
She does. She has a tendency. She okay. leans towards the woo-woo, you know.
But that,
you
know, but sage, that book most certainly does not.
Saging the house, eat, pray, fuck, Good yeah. Omens. You get
no,
the
but,
idea.
No, Paula, I have to take issue there because Good Omens is anything but woo-woo. It's not even in that realm.
Well, Tony doesn't know that.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, let's let Tony speak because, again, Tony, chapters 8 through 12, that's from Queequeg's personal story of growing up on the island till they find their boat in Nantucket, the Pequod. What do you got for us?
So why does there have to be a whole fucking chapter about chowder?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. The like, chapter before they find the boat.
There are a lot of things that could be cut from this book. And
yeah.
the chowder chapter would have been one of them. Maybe.
I would agree
the
with you.
The chowder chapter was funny, though. It was a little light humor before we got into a man's obsession with a whale that ate his leg.
Oh, interesting.
It was comedic. You didn't get that? And by the way, well, you say a whole chapter, some of these chapters are 3 pages, Tony.
This one was 3 pages. I'm like 2.5. But it could have been 2.5 less.
I didn't think the chowder joke was that funny, to be fair, because it's almost as this guy had never heard of soup before. Because you know, the woman who runs the establishment says, you want clam or cod? And he says, clam? I can't make a whole dinner out of a single clam. What kind of dinner is that? Did you hear that, Queequeg? She wants to just have us have one clam for dinner. It's like, He'd already been told to go to this inn and eat the chowder there.
And Queequeg said, I don't understand. And he said, clammy. She wants us to have clammy.
Yeah. And Queequeg was like, oh, clammy. Well, it's soup, you idiot. All right. Well, yeah. Tony, thanks for bringing that Bonnie Burns over in the Simi Valley.
Bonnie yes. Burns could be parked anywhere for internet right now. Bonnie, where are you?
Well, I'm sitting in my bedroom, and I have a lot of windows in this bedroom, and all the blinds are open, and there's beautiful light flooding in. So it's very Ooh. Happy feeling in here.
Nice.
Wow, that's like a whole Moby Dick chapter.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, you can get 2 chapters out of that.
Here's what I want to say. You know, we decided that it was going to be chapter, what, 12 to 16 or something?
I thought it was
That's
12
what it
to
was,
16,
right?
yeah.
Yeah, 12 to 16, yeah. 12 to 16, yeah.
Okay, so I put it off and put it off, and it reminded me, you know, when my daughter was writing, there was a time when they were doing broadcasting it, and it was on the East Coast, so I wrote my family, and you had to get up early in order to see it. So I asked my little brother texted me, he said, I got up at 4 a.m, I tried to watch, I'd rather have toothpicks in my eyes. And that's what I was feeling about having to go back and listen to this book again. But So today, I finally sat down and started listening to it. And I got into it, and I just think it's really a great book. I love the relationship between Ishmael and Queequeg. And I think, you know, anybody who says, like, the gay overtones, whatever, gay shmay, that is just such a great friendship. It really is. And I think Queequeg is just a really, you know, the depth of that character, the complexity of that character. And we're going to have Betsy Brand on. And one of the things I thought was so great about Breaking Bad was, you know, the facets of those characters. And I think Queequeg has that. And the scene Paula was talking about with the greenhorn guy and, you know, the action about everybody's over the around the boat, that action was so brought to life. I mean, Herman Melville is a terrific writer. Are there the chapters that you want to go through and skip? Yeah, maybe there I didn't pay so much attention. But, you know, I was going to advocate, let's just stop reading Moby Dick and go on to, like, Omens. A lot of people wanted Omens.
Yes.
But I really feel, no, I really feel that it would be so insulting to a guy who's a terrific writer that we can't do that.
Well, don't worry about that, because he is dead. One of the things, having, and the odds of him being a Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone listener is very slim to begin with. In terms of their relationship, I don't want to be a spoiler, but later in the book, Ishmael gets Queequeg involved in a Ponzi scheme, and their relationship falls apart.
Well, yeah, but Queequeg really thought he needed all that plasticware.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bonnie, that was a sensitive and cogent analysis. Thank you very much for that.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, she's going back to school.
I don't have that much to say that we haven't, you know, because I've been chiming in with all you guys, but I just think that the bit that we were reading ends with what is a kind of fantastic, you know, foreshadowing and sort of a little comedy sketch. And I do love it that the guy, the Captain Peleg, who owns the boat, is trying to tell Ishmael that everything's going to be great, right? But, you know, Ahab is fantastic even after the whale bit him off. But he keeps backtracking in this way that feels almost like a Monty Python sketch. He keeps backtracking and saying things like, I've got the quotes right here. Ishmael wants to meet Ahab. And Peleg says, but I don't think you'll be able to at present. I don't know exactly what's the matter with him, but he keeps close inside the house, a sort of sick, yet he don't look so. In fact, he ain't sick, but no, he ain't well either. Anyhow, young man, he won't always see me, so I don't see how he'll see you. And Ishmael starts getting worried. And so a page later, Ishmael's like, is this fair to go on? I mean, is this guy qualified to go to sea with me? And Peleg goes, I know that he was never very jolly, and I know that on the passage home he was a little out of his mind for a spell, but it was the sharp shooting pains in his bleeding stump that brought that about, as anyone might see. I know, too, that ever since he lost his leg last voyage by that accursed whale, he's been kind of moody. Desperate, moody, and savage sometimes. But that will all pass off.
This sounds taken right out of Mike Pence's mouth.
Yeah. Exactly. He's making so many excuses, but at the same time listing this horrible, like, obvious madman that they're about to get on the boat with. And then Ishmael goes like, oh, all right. I'll get on.
Sounds good to me. You know, yep. I don't think I'd even really noticed that. I mean, I read it. Well, I didn't read it. I listened to it, but I didn't really notice. I mean, yeah, I did think he said some dark, shadowy things about him, but I think because Ishmael was comfortable with it, so was I.
He does really lay it on really thick about how weird Ahab's been acting lately, and this is the first moment that Ishmael's meeting him.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, this was. And speaking of good points, let's see what Ken Lezebnik has to say about Moby Dick.
Oh, by the way, Ken was... Ken is where now? Where does he say he is?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Because I did get a report the other day that he was spotted in Kansas City, Missouri.
It's quite possible.
So,
All right.
It's not my place to say.
Here's Ken's latest take on the book. I'll just read it verbatim. I was struck by the theme of shared servitude. Ishmael asks, what of it if some old hunks of sea captains orders me to get a broom and sweep down the decks? What does that indignity amount to, weighed, I mean, in the scales of the New Testament? Ishmael is telling us that we are all beholden to someone else, and he acknowledges our common humanity by pointing out that, quote, everybody is one way or other served in much the same way. So the universal thump is passed round, and all hands should rub each other's shoulder blades and be content. So I'm rubbing your shoulder blades from Brooklyn, nobodies. Love, Ken.
Wait a minute, isn't that in the first chapter?
That's, yeah, once again, I'm almost certain that that's once again from the first chapter.
I think Ken has a version of the book that just has, it's very thick, but it's the first chapter over and over again.
Yeah, although Occam's razor would tell us that another explanation is that he just hasn't read past the first chapter.
Well,
that's a possibility.
Most of what he said was a quote from the first chapter.
Yeah, he didn't even really analyze it
much.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Isn't Ken Lezendik.
Doesn't Ken teach college?
Yeah. He's head of the program.
That's a problem right there. He apparently he's taking some of those college students' tricks and using them on us. You know what? I'd like to put on Ken's paper a see me.
All right, Ken Lezebnik, if you're listening, and I'm fairly sure you're not, see Paula.
Yeah, do. Oh, do.
All right, and speaking of Paula, do you have a word for us this week?
Oh, my gosh. I do have a word, Adam. It's obstreperous. It's an adjective that means noisy and difficult to control. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. My dog, Mo, is an uncharacteristically obstreperous golden retriever. I'm going to put this right into the vocabulary song. Hold on just a second. I got to get my Glock. And I don't mean that in the seditionist way.
Well, the way you play.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, baby. This week's word is obstreperous. It's an adjective that means noisy and difficult to control. Can't get her to stop barking at people when they stroll. Last week's word was evanescent. It's an adjective that means, I had it a minute ago. I can almost see it. Smells like heaven. No, that's not it. Oh, quickly fading from sight, memory, or existence, like crews reflecting on the time they tried to kill Pence. The week before that, the word was rictus. It's a noun that means a fixed grimace or grin. I'm happy for the best actress, even though I didn't win. Going back before that, we had decoction. It's a noun that means the action or process of extracting the essence of something. He's really just a mouth that won't stop lying. And not long ago, we had inscrutable. It's an adjective that means impossible to understand or interpret. Lindsey Graham says stupid shit that I just don't get. Let's never forget gallimaufry, which I pronounced wrong until nobody James Harder corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumbler medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do. I do. I do.
Woop, 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 woop.
There it is, baby.
Wow, that one word gets quite a workout.
Obstreperous.
Wow.
Who's out barking in the backyard now? That obstreperous
woof, woof.
Damn
she
dog.
She likes obstreperous, yeah. Coming up, Oscar Wilde said, I love acting. It is so much more real than life. We'll watch Paula get real with actress Betsy Brandt. That's next on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is... Whoa! Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
McCavity! I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Go, Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're Jesus, the best. You the be-
okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
On this day in unremarkable history, Babe Ruth said, I won't even eat bundt cake.
Thank you, house band Kevin Kelso. Now, Paula Poundstone, you still with me here?
I am.
You are always trying to improve your craft as an actor.
Mostly,
don't deny
I'm always.
It. Yeah. I'm,
that and dusting. I do both of those things.
And sifting. You sift a lot of cat litter.
I sift a tremendous amount. But while I'm sifting, I do monologues.
Okay. So every now and then, we're privileged to have a master actor come and coach you in a segment that we like to call Outside the Actor Studio. And today, oh boy, get ready, Paula Poundstone, brace yourself. We are fortunate to have with us tonight an actor who was just nominated for a Critics' Choice Award for her supporting performance in the AMC series Soulmates. She earned her MFA at Harvard's Institute for Advanced Theater Training and has appeared on stage in many productions. She played Heather Hughes in the comedy Life in Pieces. And as Paula, as you know so well, and you're going to have to tell her all about this, she created the role of Marie Schrader in Breaking Bad. Please welcome Betsy Brandt.
Yay! I sound so busy. Wouldn't it have been great if I just found out now that I was nominated for a Critics' Choice?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that would have been great.
But I already knew.
But
I
you knew.
Knew?
Oh, damn
knew.
It. We were hoping.
I could have feigned that I, you know, not knowing. I could have feigned surprise. I want to be clear. We were speaking about school earlier. I did not finish at Harvard.
I did not
even make it through the first year, but I felt like I worked my ass off. And so I still keep it on my, not that I finished, but that I trained for whatever amount of time I did that I trained there.
Well, that was
well,
a
you
weird
know, Betsy,
school
I
anyway,
hate to
right?
say it, but that's going to bring this interview to a screeching halt. Because everything we were going to talk about today was your Harvard training. So now we are fucked.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I did teach me how to, I did drink a fair amount of vodka with those professors, more vodka than I drank with any other professors, I have to say.
Really?
Yes.
Had no idea that was
well,
part of the
Russian.
Harvard
They were
My
Russian.
Wife worked oh. in the box office there.
Oh, at the
at
theater.
The ART.
At ART,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
absolutely.
Great. Oh, it's such a great theater.
Yeah. Apparently you weren't
not
in
much
it,
of a grad
though.
No, I didn't make it. I got a job. And I was like, I'm out.
Oh,
and then I started at UCLA. And I said, take two. Then I was like, okay, I went to UCLA to start my MFA there. I did not even make it a week. I got another job. And then I was like, can I get my parking money back? And then, I thought, I'm going to, like, the universe is telling me something. And because I had a plan, my plan was I would get an MFA and I would, you know, do theater. And hopefully I also like to teach, which thank you for having me on today to coach.
Oh, yeah.
I like to teach. And I thought I would love to teach in college. And that was my plan. And then life said, no, you're going to do these plays and TV shows and stuff.
Life told you that. Wow. Life told you that. Now, Betsy, I want to set the stage here a little bit because longtime listeners of our show are listening right now, and there's a shiver of anticipation because you might not be aware of this, but Paula Poundstone has a little bit of a, I'm going to call it a Breaking Bad problem.
Okay.
It's a Jones. It's a Jones.
Go ahead, Paula.
All right. As Adam's right, our listeners know because I've said it before.
Constantly.
First of all, I don't watch television for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is there's just so many goddamn remote things. I don't know how to turn it on. So I have Breaking Bad on DVD. And first of all, I just watched it straight through the way one would. I watched a, you know, a disc and then the next disc and the next. But that was probably 2 years, three years ago now I did that. So for the last 3 years, since I watched it all the way through the first time, I have it on DVD. I have a portable DVD player that is beside where I sleep. And I put a disc on every night and I fall asleep watching it. And then when it's, and then it,
because
and then
it's
I wake
so up, relaxed.
Exactly.
And then I wake up and I push the button again. And so it plays all night long. I leave a disc in for about a month before I switch to the next disc. And a few.
You should have done a scene from Breaking Bad because you clearly, you know it. I was like that with the West Wing. Just so you know.
Oh,
see, yeah. I've never seen The West Wing.
There's, oh, my God.
When I get hooked on a show, that's all I see. So I don't know, like, most shows. Just this I know.
Is this an intervention? Am I doing an intervention? I'm totally in. I didn't know.
Yes, tell her it's fake.
I prefer the word pretend.
Oh, my God.
It's pretend. And it's over.
It's
never
over.
It continues on in our minds, but
yeah,
it's
it's not over because I have it on DVD, so it'll never be over.
Right.
Nothing is perfect, of course, but I would say that Breaking Bad is as near perfect as it gets in terms of television performances. Everything about it, I love. So here's my question for you, Betsy Brandt. How did you become a part of it? What school did they rip you out of?
I know, because that's how I get jobs, is I enroll in grad school.
Yeah, you were going to UC Santa Monica, convinced
That was my journey. That was my journey. It was pilot season. I think it was the first pilot I read for that season. And I read that script and I thought, oh, holy shit, this is good. I hope they actually make it because I don't read scripts like that. I mean, it was such an out there concept in a fantastic way, but it was so great. And I went in and I went in for Marie, for the role of Marie. And I met Melissa Bernstein, who is, and you know, a producer on the show. Karen Moore, who was a producer of the first two seasons, and then Vince Gilligan was in that room. And I think every actor should have the opportunity to audition for Vince Gilligan because he is just wonderful and generous and lovely in every way. And
he's wonderful in the audition room?
Yeah, like he was just... and I met Dean Norris in the waiting room before I went in. And we were chatting about like, I know this is an hour, but I think it's funny. Don't you think it's funny? And he was like, yeah, I think it's funny. And I was like, okay, great. Cause I'm going in like, this is a comedy. He's like, oh yeah, me too, me too, me too. And I think we kind of encouraged each other in that way. And I recognized Dean, but I couldn't, you know, it was like, what do I know him from? But I knew I liked him. I knew I liked his work. And he was just like, it was just easy with him right away. I felt like I'd known him for years. And I think vice versa. But Vince was just so great. And he made me feel so comfortable in that room. And we tried a lot of stuff. And, you know, he ended up having me that day. I think it was that day. He's like, have a read Skylar. And I was like, okay. So I read Skylar, but, you know, and then there was another character at the time, Linda, who was, I think they thought it was going to be a series regular. And so I read her too. And then he brought me back for Marie. And that's the role I ended up testing for. And that's the role I got.
You know what? You could have done Skylar great, but so much comedy would have been lost without you.
Well, and you know what?
Marie.
It's just
like, it wasn't my job. That wasn't my role. Like, I thought Skylar was a great role. And I think, you know, it would have been different. She would have been a totally different character in some ways if I played it, because Anna and I are different. We bring different things to the table. And I think they would have ended up writing her differently if I played her. You know, I mean, that's the other thing that I think is so great about that show is that, you know, it's not like they don't go in with a plan, but, you know, you kind of got to let the show be the show. And that's how it's great. You know, if okay. You're a little
I want to tell you one thing about the idea of reading for Vince.
Yeah.
You said you wish every actress had the chance to read for Vince. And that's a beautiful world picture that you paint. But not every actress is going to get a job. So basically, then a lot of actresses would get rejected by Vince. And I don't think that's probably as much fun as you're thinking.
Yeah, you know, I've gotten jobs and I've also gotten rejected. I prefer jobs or offers. Like, I've tried both.
Radical.
Yeah.
I always say, like, you just, like, you want a ticket to the lottery, you know, and then you get it. But I just felt like that was my show. I would have played any role, you know.
Well, it's Paula's show too.
Tell me how they. All right. Sometimes in the middle of the night when I wake up and I push the button, mm-hmm. I accidentally push the wrong button, and so I've seen.
It sounds
scenes.
Like you're imploding the world with like nuclear devices. Sometimes
no, not that. Not that.
I thank God she's not button. President. Her policies would be great, but we'd all be dead.
Yeah. No, not that button. When I push the button to play, I have before accidentally pushed the wrong button and seen scenes just briefly because I get off them right away that aren't in the series. So you guys made scenes that got cut or?
Oh yeah, for sure. Sure.
Why?
Time.
But did they move the story in a different direction? Stuff that we then imagine sort of happened, or that
so
you
Paula,
as actors?
Paula, you've watched this thing like 150 times, and you've never watched the deleted scene.
That surprised me.
No, I don't believe in it, and I won't watch special. What do you call it? Special. What do they call that? Where
commentary?
They talk about it? Yeah, I won't do that.
Well,
okay.
It fucks it up.
Beneath you.
It's beneath me.
Okay,
I'm
so,
a purist.
So Betsy,
I'm a purist.
Betsy, we've asked you here to describe the deleted scenes to Paul.
No.
Do I have sides for those scenes?
No. The reason I bring up the deleted scenes is because I want to know what the process was. Like, how much you knew about the story ahead of time. Was there just the pilot episode? That you knew about? Did Vince know where it ended? Like that?
Well, in the beginning, Vince said he wouldn't go more than 3 seasons.
Lion sack of shit.
And he didn't, what he never wanted was, you know, he's like this, you know, well, it is, he's our main character. There's not going to be a miracle cure. Like, he's on his way out. He's the prognosis is not good. You know, he had some ups and downs, but he's like, there's not going to be any sort of like Hollywood. Oh my God. He tried this, you know, experimental treatment and, oh, but wouldn't you know, it's amazing. And now we can go 9 seasons. He never wanted to do that. And he always said he wanted to leave the party early. I think part of it though is just, you know, like I said, he likes to paint himself into a corner when he writes and have to figure a way out of it. So I think he and that group of writers, that room of writers, was just phenomenal. I mean, they still are. I love them and their talent. And I think that, Vince surprised himself. And that was really amazing to be a part of.
I'll tell you something. Part of the reason I won't read for Vince is that...
Oh, I didn't know you were... It's a pass. I didn't know.
Yeah. No, I just won't do it.
Absolutely won't do it.
Because the guy lies about how many seasons he's going to have. And
your time is valuable, Paula Poundstone.
Yeah, you know what? It's his loss. That's my feeling. Yeah. His loss.
Yes. I don't even know if he would feel qualified to ask.
we're gonna get to that in a minute. I mean, in a little while, we're gonna unleash the mighty Poundstone acting machine on you. So you'll see what that's like in just a few minutes. all right, Michael Chekhov wrote, "An actor has to burn inside with outer ease." Stay tuned to find out if Paula can find a balance between burning and ease. The cat of the week is O'Malley from Idaho Falls, Idaho. Back with Outside the Actor's Studio with Betsy Brandt. Paula, as we always do, we're going to have you and Betsy read a scene, and Betsy will coach your performance. And here are the characters you'll be playing. Are you guys ready to receive?
Yeah.
I will receive.
Okay.
Yes. Starting with Betsy. Betsy, you
I have
control...
a, I have a note already, though.
All right. Yes. What's that?
Well, if this is a scene for Paula, it's really heavy for my character. I would.
Okay, but here's the thing, Betsy. I don't read for big parts.
So this is more of a chemistry read situation. Like, the other actors already cast and they're.
Yes, exactly.
You. Right. Okay.
I need a little flavor. All right, okay. Betsy, you're going to betray. You're going to portray Junior Officer Madeline Riptide, who changed her last name legally from Jones to Riptide 2 years ago. She's fresh out of the police academy in Fresno. She is a very fit, perky woman child. She craves respect, but even she is not sure for what.
Can I add to that? Her friends call her Rip.
You've done some work on this character.
Yeah.
Good for you. Paula, did you hear that?
I did. I was very impressed.
Betsy did some work on her character. She knows what her friends call her. Okay. Yeah. Paula Poundstone, you are the long-suffering senior officer, Janet Cutler. Paula, what do Janet's friends call her?
Janet doesn't have a lot of friends. She's just a cop.
Paula.
She's a cop. She's a cop.
Thank you for coming in. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. All right.
I hope
Janet
the traffic
Cutler
isn't
has
bad
been...
on the way home.
All right.
So close to being good. Okay.
Let me read the description. Janet Cutler has been a cop in Los Angeles for so long, she remembers little else about her life. She has an eggplant shape and is a bit doughy. Our scene begins with the shotgun seat door open. Madeline Riptide leans down to talk to Janet Cutler, seated in the driver's seat of a black and white police car.
At police headquarters and lethal weapon? Mel Gibson accidentally knocks Danny Glover down before they meet. Danny Glover spills all of his papers, and then it turns out Mel Gibson is Danny Glover's new partner. I'm glad we don't have to go through that. Hi, I'm your new junior officer, Madeline Riptide.
Right place. Have a seat.
Madeline drops into the seat, and Janet extends a hand.
Senior Officer Cutlet. Oops, sorry.
Benzie holds some...
Senior Officer Cutler.
Betsy holds some paperwork in one hand and a Starbucks latte in the other.
Cup holder.
Janet retracts her hand and just stares at her new junior officer. Madeline finally settles and notices the stare.
Okay, I know a 40-year-old rookie, but the academy took a chance on me. And guess what? I was top of my class. I can do 100 push-ups in 2 minutes. This work is my calling. I know that now. Just took me a while to find myself.
And where were you? Under the couch?
No. I mean, you know, how one day you just realize you don't have to do everything your parents say. It's kind of scary when you realize that it's your life. You want to have a messy room? You have a messy room. You want to put up a Billy Idol poster? You put up a Billy Idol poster. I remember that day. It was about 2 years ago. It just hit me straight between the eyes. Do you remember when it was for you?
I don't. No.
Janet starts the car and pulls out of the lot to begin their patrol.
I really want to shoot somebody. What? I'm just being honest. I do. I want to shoot somebody. I mean, I want to do it legally. You know, I hate when people say to be honest, and then they say what they're going to say. I mean, I expect people to be honest. You don't get points for that. That's one thing I can promise you. For me, you'll get honesty. How long have you been on the force?
30 years.
Huh. What made you want to join?
Stubborn hip fat.
What do you mean?
I thought the rigors of police training would help me lose my stubborn hip fat. I'm not a self-motivator.
Did you? And then... you gained it back again?
To be honest, no.
I guess we're going to be like, we're like Cagney and Lacey, except one of them had big front teeth and the other one had a stalker, and I am not going to put up with that shit.
Sharon Gless had a stalker. She's an actress. I think you're in the clear.
Where'd you hear that?
The car rounds a corner, and there's what looks to be a homeless man with mental health problems screaming about Jesus and blocking traffic in the intersection. Janet pulls over into the adjacent 7-Eleven parking lot.
That's a 21955. You want me to handle this?
Sure.
We see from Janet's POV, Madeline engages in a shouting match with the alleged jaywalker. Just as she sees Madeline reach for her handcuffs, Janet exits the car and walks towards her junior partner and the alleged jaywalker.
Excuse me. You've got a cute way of talking. You got the better of me. Just snap your fingers and I'm walking. I'm on my way for a donut, Homer Simpson. You want a donut? Then move over here to the dance floor. And you, Super Cop, come with me.
Now I got that song in my head.
Janet and Madeline step into the 7-Eleven and come out with 3 donuts and a Slurpee.
Because I'm the one with the big front teeth.
I told you I don't want a donut. Didn't you hear him shouting that I had nice bazoombas? He gets a donut for that?
Well, if you're not going to eat your donut, he gets 2, 1 for each.
As they approach the alleged jaywalker, Janet hands him the bag of donuts and a Slurpee.
How am I going to get that fucking song out of my head?
Here's how you're going to get that song out of your head. Find a place to sit, a nice place, like on that patch of grass. Take a breath in and let it out slowly. Then have a bite of donut. Then do it again, slowly. That's the key, slowly. Take care of yourself. Come on. Wait, how did that get in there? Wait.
Nice hips!
Thanks.
And scene. Wow, right. That is
sorry.
A great
I was thrown by I was thrown by a little, I think Ken, it's, I don't think I ever had written "Come on, let's walk back to the car." That threw me.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay, I see.
I think I think I wrote "They walk back to the car."
Okay, well, that's probably the only flaw in your acting technique.
Oh, yeah.
Let's
move forward with this. So what I would like to do now is facilitate this acting workshop process. Betsy, what notes, and be honest, would you have for Paula on her performance here?
Betsy, how close was it to being good?
It was like right there. Here's good, and you're like right over here. Good there. And you're like, I can see the good from here.
Well, what should I do?
You were fantastic.
So I think you need to slow it down.
Oh, okay.
I think you need to slow it down. I want to see what that feels like. And maybe that's not the way we keep it, but I want you to slow it down and see if we learn anything from that in some places. Good. I feel like we might find things that land a little more. We might find some jokes that we didn't know were in there, even if we wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying just because she's a hard-bitten cop doesn't mean she has to bark out all the words.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is what she was saying.
No. It's just slow it down, more listening, more taking in the rookie.
Okay.
It's just a little more of a setup for her, which is going to help you.
Okay.
That's great. And Paula, do you have any notes for Betsy?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but no, Betsy, that was really fantastic. Okay, so let's take
my
it from the
best
top
work.
Again. So, Paula, you're going to slow this down, right?
I'm slowing it down. Can we start from I know a 40-year-old rookie?
Yeah.
Okay. And Vince, sit down and shut up.
Wait, I know a 40-year-old rookie? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. And by the way, Betsy, you are really good in that.
This
moment.
Is typecasting.
It's so good.
I was meant to
ready?
Be a cop.
All right,
wait,
here we go.
Hang on. Oh, yeah, okay. All right, you ready?
Janet retracts her hand and just stares at her new junior officer. Madeline finally settles and notices the stare.
I know, a 40-year-old rookie, but the academy took a chance on me, and guess what? I was the top of my class. I can do 100 push-ups in 2 minutes. This work is my calling. I know that. Just took me a while to find myself.
And where were you? Under the couch?
No, I mean, you know how one day you just realize you don't have to do everything your parents say. It's kind of scary when you realize that it's your life. You want to have a messy room? You have a messy room. You want to put up a Billy Idol poster? You put up a Billy Idol poster. I remember that day. It was about 2 years ago and hit me straight between the eyes. You remember when it was for you?
I don't. No.
Janet starts the car and pulls out a lot to begin their patrol.
I really want to shoot somebody. What? I'm just being honest. I do. I want to shoot somebody. I want to do it legally. God, I hate it when people say to be honest and then they say whatever they're going to say. I mean, I expect people to be honest. You don't get points for that. That's one thing I can promise you. For me, you'll get honesty. How long have you been on the force?
30 years.
Oh. What made you want to join?
Stubborn hip fat.
What do you mean?
I thought the rigors of police training would help me lose my stubborn hip fat. I'm not a self-motivator.
Did you? And then you gained it back again.
To be honest, no.
I guess we're going to be like, were like Cagney and Lacey. Well, except one of them had big front teeth and the other one had a stalker, which I am not going to put up with that shit.
Sharon Gless had a stalker. She's an actress. I think you're in the clear.
Where'd you hear that?
Should we continue?
No, we could stop. I'm good.
That's fantastic. Oh, you know what? You know what I noticed there? And oh my God, in addition to being a fantastic actor, Betsy, your coaching was really great. I mean, Paula, you are slowly becoming, to borrow from Breaking Bad, you are slowly becoming Mike in this scene.
Ooh.
I have to confess that as I was writing it, I did, you know, keep in mind, for 8 or 9 hours a night, I listened to Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And there may have been.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm actually right now on a disc that's heavily Mike. I may have been somewhat Mike influenced in my writing. I confess. Betsy, you were really, you know what? I had a brief glimmer, a little glow of pride in my writing at how cool you read, especially I really want to shoot somebody.
It's good. Listen, if you don't get this role, I feel like I am just worthless as a coach.
She wrote it.
I know.
She should really get it.
If I don't get this role, I'm just, and I'm not trying to threaten the universe, but I'm fucking going back to Harvard.
Good. Finish what you started.
Yeah, got to get that application out.
What you started. I don't think they even, but you know what? I don't think they even have that program anymore.
Yeah. You know what? Their loss. That's my feeling.
That's right.
Do they even have that ticket booth where Jeannie Simpson worked?
At the ART, they do, in fact.
Oh no, that's there. That's still there. That's still there. But I don't think they have the Moscow. I don't know if the Moscow Art School is there anymore. I don't think they do a master's in that program.
It was called the Moscow Art School.
Yeah, it was teachers, company members from the Moscow Art Theater.
Oh, for God's sakes!
Yeah,
they were just
I just like when I, you know, in undergrad, when I started doing Chekhov, this sounds so douchey to be like, when I started doing Chekhov, it changed. It just like changed the way I looked at what I did. Like it was those characters and that writing and just, it was amazing. Amazing.
I don't think I've ever really understood Chekhov. I read it so that I could say that I had, but I don't think I really understood it. But let me just tell you something, Betsy. I've been reading Moby Dick. And it's really made me so much smarter than the average person.
You are way smarter than you used to be.
Oh, my God. A lot of people haven't even read Dick. And I...
And you, Paula Poundstone.
You consume
You've read
it.
Dick.
Yeah.
You know, Melville just speaks to me. A lot of people don't get the chowder joke, but I get the chowder joke.
Wait, do you want to know more? So, and Chekhov was a doctor before he was a playwright.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Doesn't that make, that made me feel a little lazy. I mean, not enough that I would do anything about it, but I loved that his mind worked, in such different ways.
Okay. I'm not trying to one-up anybody. Certainly not Chekhov, but this isn't the only thing I've ever done. I used to bust tables. At the Copley Plaza in Boston. And I one time bust Joan Armatrading's table there. Take that, Chekhov.
Wow, check and mate, Chekhov.
Yeah, exactly.
Whose table?
Joan Armatrading. She's a musician. She's a terrific musician.
I'm sorry, but I don't
okay.
know.
That's because you've been so busy with school and acting. All right. Okay. Wait.
I'm gonna help out. Yeah,
all right. What? You know, okay. I don't want to keep you forever because I'll feel guilty. But
that's what I'm trying to do is not keep her forever. But go ahead.
All right. I did since I have you here, and there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. Do you have a favorite scene from Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Not from Chekhov. From Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Guess. No. Just kidding.
No, we'll be here all
wait.
Night.
I'll wait.
Okay,
yes.
I'll tell you. I'll tell you what my favorite scene is, and it's really hard to say because, honest to God, I just love you. But when you've stolen the spoon, and the lady chases after you, when the bag falls,
fatty.
And all this shit. Yes, you call her fatty, and then all
I call
shit
her fatty, and then you, tell her she's gonna get it.
Right, exactly. You are in so much trouble when all this stuff falls out of your bag. Oh my God, that was great. Was that all written? Do you improvise at all in that?
I'm sure Fatty was in there. I called her Fatty twice in one take. That actor was great, Jennifer. But I had to go tell her before we shot that scene. I was like, I'm gonna just like do it, and it's so sorry. Like I have to say that so that I don't feel guilty.
That's fantastic.
Saying it, and then it was a great. I loved that episode.
Oh, my God.
All right. I'm going to perform an act of mercy here and extricate Betsy from her new stalker.
Paula,
I have to tell you, you are so incredibly sweet and wonderful. And thank you for having me on. And I really, keep me posted. I hope you get a call back for this job because I hope I do too.
I hope so too. She's the executive producer too, so she should really twist some arms here.
Betsy, sometimes when you get a job, they let you bring your acting coach. So I'm hoping you're not going to be in school at that time.
You never know.
I always drop out of school for a job.
My mistake. Absolutely.
As long as I get my parking money back, I will drop
you
out.
Need that parking
Getting
money.
My parking money back was a like ridiculously big thing for me at UCLA.
Absolutely, it's not
I
cheap.
Would think.
She was just nominated for a Critics' Choice Award for her supporting performance in the AMC series Soulmates. Betsy Brandt, I'm springing you from this. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
For
another
edition
Mr. Felber.
Of Outside the Actor's Studio.
Thank you, Betsy.
It was incredibly fun. Thank you for having me. Have a great night. Don't catch COVID. Don't catch the clap. Don't catch anything.
We're going to try to not catch anything, but we're glad we caught you. You were fantastic.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great night. Thanks for having me. Bye.
I'm crying.
Don't stop crying. I got to do our coming up. She's fantastic. Coming up, quotations, maybe. Dorothy L. Sayers said, I always have a quotation for everything. It saves original thinking. We delve into our favorite quotes. Maybe. It's been a long show. That's coming up, perhaps, right after this. Fun fact, the Eiffel Tower is 15 centimeters shorter in the wintertime because of the cold, or at least that's its story. And we're back, and you know what, Paula, that segment with Betsy was so long and so fantastic that I think we're just plumb out of time in terms of our quotation segment.
All right. We'll bring our quotations next week.
Oh, yeah. They'll keep. They've kept for hundreds of years.
I'm crying from having Betsy Brandt on.
It was amazing. And
She was really fun.
Your work together was like real. It was a real acting workshop.
Oh, man. I can't wait till we have our own show. She's Betsy. I'm Paula. She's Betsy. I'm Paula. Oh, my God.
The Betsy and Paula show. Okay, so Paula, what's going on in the Poundstone product empire this week?
Well, Adam, Poundstone Industries is teeming with activity. With Valentine's Day coming up, I've had to hire two more imaginary friends to keep it running smoothly. Listeners, you can go to the store at paulapoundstone.com to find the gift to make your special someone happy this Valentine's Day. I can also make a video message for you for the occasion. Go to cameo.com/PaulaP33. I would tell you more about it, but I've been muzzled by a listener named Heidi, who has complained that there are too many plugs on the show. So fine, Heidi.
Well, Heidi, you'll be pleased to know that I've got nothing to plug this week. I hope you all enjoyed my Super Bowl simulcast. And I am here to plug the fact that I will have something very exciting to plug in a week or so. But until then, I got nothing else. So
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, you should be, Paula Poundstone. Subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You'll get it every week at no charge. If you want to send us some mail, well, you can do that at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Once again, that's nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. And that is our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Lefelber. Special thanks to our guest, Betsy Brandt.
Yay!
Oh, my Lord. And to our beloved house band, Kevin Kelso.
Yay!
We love you too, man. Write us a song anytime. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by Land Romo. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
It's Paula and Betsy. They're cops. They work together. It's Paula and Betsy. They're cops in every weather.
She's Betsy. I'm Paula. We're out there fighting crime. She's Betsy. I'm Paula. With every single rhyme.
It's Betsy and Paula. There's no way they can be wrong. It's Paula and Betsy, and this is their theme song.
You know what I'm really worried that the demand for the pets, the demand for the Betsy and Paula buddy cop
Betsy and
show,
Paula show, yeah.
The Betsy and Paula show. Oh my God, that's
it's gonna be huge.
That's a roller derby team right there, Betsy and
especially
Paula.
Especially if it's Betsy and Paula, because then it's a show about somebody who, like, runs a pet store and somebody who plays in the WNBA.
Yeah, Betsy and Paula. Yeah, no, I just think that the demand for the Buddy Cop show with Betsy Brandt and Paula Poundstone is going to be overwhelming.
Yeah, I pity the networks that are going to have to field those emails.
I pity the colleges that are going to lose Betsy Brandt's money.
Starburns Audio, a podcast,
a podcast network.